Chapter 26, Election Day. Election Day is always the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. When I woke up that morning, I had a bad feeling in the pit of my stomach. If the Checkers speech worked for me, like it worked for Richard Nixon, I might actually win the election. The overnight polls showed that the speech hit home with at least some Americans. Moon and June jumped up a few points, and President White dropped down a few. Good morning, America, said the race was too close to call. Senator Dunn had dropped down to a distant third. It looked like it was all over for him. School was open on election day, and I decided to go. Staying home all day would only make me more nervous than I already was. My school's the place where grown-ups in the neighborhood go to vote. Every election day, the gym is emptied out and filled with those big voting machines. I always thought of election day as a drag, because we wouldn't get to have gym that day. It was pretty weird seeing all of those grown-ups lining up to vote and thinking that some of them would be voting for me. It was the first time I really understood or appreciated that this is how we make important decisions in this country. It was impossible to pay much attention to school. Everybody was looking at me, asking me how I felt, requesting autographs. The teachers didn't seem to be able to concentrate on their lessons either. Chelsea caught up with me after homeroom. "I'm so excited," she said. "I'm going to wear my red silk dress with the shoulder ruffles to the party tonight." "I'm sure you'll look terrific," I said, with as much fake enthusiasm as I could muster. Chelsea was really starting to get on my nerves. Lane had booked the presidential suite and the big ballroom at the Edgewater Hotel for the evening. Just about everybody in town was going to be there to watch the election returns on TV. Lane and I didn't get the chance to talk until lunchtime. I told him what I'd heard about the latest polls. For the first time, he didn't seem that interested. "Polls mean nothing at this point," Lane said. "It's the electoral votes that matter now." I never really understood the whole election college thing. So, Lane explained it to me. It turns out that each of the 50 states is given one electoral vote for every member it has in Congress. That includes the state's two senators plus however many members it has in the House of Representatives. The states with higher populations have more representatives and more electoral votes, so states like New York, California, Texas, and Pennsylvania have more electoral votes than less populated states like Nevada, Alaska, and Rhode Island. Lane explained that whichever candidate gets the most votes in a state wins the electoral votes in the state, and whichever candidate gets 270 or more electoral votes wins the election. It didn't seem exactly fair to me. A candidate could become president if he just won a few of the big states, even though he lost all the smaller states. Lane said it was even possible to win the election on electoral votes, even if more people voted for the other candidate. In fact, that actually happened in 1824, 1876, 1888, and 2000. "What if nobody gets 270 electoral votes?" I asked. "Then the House of Representatives votes to decide who will be president." After school, I went home, and Mom fussed over me, making food and helping me pick out the clothes for the evening. I think it was the longest time I'd ever spent with her when she didn't mention carpet tiles once. After dinner, Mom, Dad, and I checked into the presidential suite at the Edgewater Hotel. Lane was already there, running around, completing last-minute details for the party afterward. June Sires was wheeled in by her kids, who were older than my mom and dad. Mrs. Sires looked great in a new print dress and lace hat. All my aunts, uncles, and cousins milled around, scarfing down chips in those little hot dogs wrapped in rolls. Chelsea looked fabulous in her silk dress, of course. I invited her to stay with us in the presidential suite, but she said she was too nervous and would watch the results in the ballroom downstairs. I think she just wanted to be where most people would see her dress. Lane's plan was for me to come down to the ballroom as soon as the TV networks declared a winner. He had written two speeches for me, an acceptance speech in case I won, and a concession speech in case I lost. He also arranged for the hotel to put four TV sets in our room so we could watch ABC, CBS, NBC, and CNN all at the same time. When the polls started to close on the East Coast at around 8 p.m., we pulled chairs around the glowing screens. For about an hour, none of the results and the announcers were in, and some of the announcers filled the time by talking, mostly about me. They went on and on about and how historic it was for a kid to run for president. I've seen a lot of big stories in my career reporting the news, one of the anchormen babbled, the Kennedy assassination, the Vietnam War, Watergate, man landing on the moon, the space shuttle Challenger explosion, but never in all the years did it ever cross my mind that a child would not only run for president, but ever have a chance of winning the presidency. This is the turning point in history of the Earth. Lane and I made gagging noises and pretended to stick our fingers down our throats. If the Earth knew it was going to be around this long, Mrs. Sire said, it would have taken better care of itself. A little after 9 o'clock Eastern Time, the results started coming in. We stopped talking among ourselves and pulled our chairs closer to the screens. With 13% of the votes in, the CNN announcer suddenly said, we are projecting the state of Delaware, and its 3 electoral votes will go to President White. Boo! Everybody hooted, but nobody was too upset. 3 lousy votes, my dad said. It means nothing. A few minutes later, the ABC commentator stopped in the middle of a sentence and announced, we are projecting that the state of Maine and its 4 electoral votes will go to young Judson Moon. Everybody yelled and screamed, we're winning! My mom shouted, we're actually winning! Calm down, Dad grumbled. That's just 4 lousy votes. They mean nothing. Then the results started pouring in. CBS projected President White was the winner of Connecticut. NBC picked me to take New Jersey. President White picked up Vermont, Rhode Island, Florida, and New Hampshire. I won New York with its 33 big electoral votes. Senator Dunn won West Virginia's 5 electoral votes, but he's from West Virginia. I figured if you can't win your own state, you must be really pathetic. Outside of West Virginia, he wasn't doing very well. It was going to be White against Moon for all the marbles. Moon and June pulled ahead of President White in the electoral vote tally, but only slightly. The polls were now closed on the West Coast, and it was looking like the election was going to come down to California and its 54 electoral votes. President White would win a state, and then I would win one. Every time a winner was projected, Mrs. Sires would streak with glee or disappointment, depending on whether or not we won the state. Dad was trying not to appear nervous, but he was pacing the floor and mumbling to himself, which he always does when he's uptight. Lean was very calm and serious. He had his laptop computer with him, and he kept recalculating the electoral vote totals every time one of the TV networks projected a winner for the state. By 11:30 p.m., the results were tabulated from every state except California. All 4 TV networks said the vote was still too close to call there. I was stuck at 217 electoral votes, and the president had 164. If we win California, Moon and June is the winner by 1 electoral vote, announced Lane. If White wins California, the election is thrown to the House of Representatives to decide. The voting was over. It was out of our hands. There was no speech anybody could make, no hand anybody could shake that would make a difference. There was nothing to do but sit there and watch. Sitting there, I felt like I must be in the middle of a dream. This Judson Moon everybody was talking about was some other kid. It wasn't me. It was too unbelievable to think that I was actually running for President of the United States, or that I might actually win. It had to be a dream, or maybe a nightmare. Sometimes it's hard to tell one from the other. I was shaken from these thoughts when the CNN anchorman suddenly announced, "This just in!" with some urgency in his voice. Everybody stopped talking. At 11:52 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on November 7th, CNN projects the state of California will go to... He paused for just a moment to take a breath. Moon and June! Judson Moon will become the next president of the United States for the first time in American history. I didn't hear the rest. A roar went up in the hotel room. Mom and Dad and Mrs. Sires were all over me, hugging me, kissing me. Car horns blared from the street outside. Kings of the Hill! Lane shouted, jumping all over the couch like a maniac. We did it, Judd! We're kings of the hill! I think Lane was happier than anybody. He grabbed me and thanked me for letting him run the campaign. This is all I ever wanted, he whispered in my ear. Remember our deal? I'll never tell you what to wear or say or do again. Now you're in charge. I shivered when he said that. I'm in charge. After the commotion subsided a bit, we all tumbled downstairs to the ballroom, where a few thousand people were waiting. When the elevator door opened, a spotlight found me and Mrs. Sires, and a deafening roar exploded. Hundreds of red, white, and blue balloons fell from the ceiling. The band struck up, "Shine on, Harvest Moon." Men pummeled me on the back, and women kissed me. Some people just reached out and touched me like I was a religious object. Lane guided me to the podium and handed me a sheet of paper. "What does it say?" I asked. "It's pretty standard acceptance speech," he said. "The usual patriotic stuff." I looked down into the crowd. They wouldn't stop cheering. I held up my hands. I shrugged my shoulders. I put my fingers to my lips as if to say, "Shh." They kept right on screaming. I spotted Chelsea in the crowd, clapping as hard as she could without ruining her nails. On the other side of the room, I saw Abby smiling at me like a mom watching her kid at his first piano recital. It must have been 15 minutes until the noise level died down enough for me to speak. "I shouldn't be here," I finally said into the microphone. "It's way past my bedtime." The ballroom exploded in another roar, and I had to wait 5 more minutes for everybody to quiet down. "I have prepared a victory speech," I said, "but I'm not going to use it." I glanced at Lane and saw his eyebrows shoot up to his forehead. "First of all, I want to thank the people who got me here. Mom and Dad, of course, June Sires, Lane Brainerd, and all the volunteers and kids across America who worked so hard to make this impossible dream happen. And of course, all the people who voted for me." I paused for a moment to let that sink in, because I knew that what I was about to say was going to blow their minds. "I have a question for the grown-ups of America," I said seriously. "Are you out of your minds? Are you expecting me to enforce the Constitution? I never even read it. I was absent from school that day. You want me as Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces? What if somebody attacked the United States? Would you really, really want me to in charge? I don't know the difference between North Korea and North Carolina. You expect me to sign bills into law? You expect me to appoint Supreme Court justices? I'm just a snot-nosed kid." For once in my life, I wasn't goofing, and it felt good. "To win this election," I said, "I became everything I always hated. I turned into a liar, a fake, a fraud. The saddest part is, it worked. America must be in a really bad shape if you elected me as president. You better get it together and find some qualified people to run this country, or we'll all be in big trouble." "In conclusion," I said, "I hereby resign as president-elect of the United States of America." Have you ever heard 3,000 people gasp at the same time? It's really cool. For a second, I thought all the air was going to be sucked out of the ballroom. It was so quiet, you could have heard a pin drop in there, at least until my mom fainted and hit the floor with a thud. The press were all over me, like ants at a picnic. "Does this make Mrs. Sires president?" somebody asked. "Will you reconsider? What about all the kids who worked so hard to get you elected? Are you finished with politics? What are you going to do with the rest of your life?" "Ladies and gentlemen of the press," I announced, "I don't even know what I'm going to do tomorrow, much less the rest of my life. To use the words of my running mate, June Sires, the future will tell us what will happen when it's good and ready." As I trotted off the stage, everybody was looking at me like they were dead fish in a fish store. The first person to come over to me was Lane, of course. "Once again, your political instincts are brilliant, Moon," he said, clapping a hand on my back. "You make a much better candidate than you would make a president. Perfect career move." June Sires rolled her wheelchair over to me. "Now I know for sure you're crazy, Judson Moon," she said. "You're probably right, Mrs. Sires. Too bad you're out of the race, though," she continued. "Why?" "'Cause you're just the kind of man I would vote for," she said. Considering that she hadn't voted since 1944, I was very flattered. "Hey," Mrs. Sires said before rolling away, "you promised you'd kiss me on election night, so pucker up, big boy." She wrapped her arms around me, and for the life of me, I can't figure out how such a tiny little woman could squeeze so hard. Chelsea Daniels was sobbing uncontrollably, so Lane and I went over to comfort her. "Hundreds of thousands of silkworms are going to die a horrible death," she bawled, "and I won't be able to do a single thing about it." Tears were running down her face, making little dark streams when they dissolved her makeup. Lane pointed to himself to let me know he would take care of Chelsea. "You know, Chelsea," Lane said, "I've been thinking about you. Have you ever considered entering the Miss America pageant? You have the looks, the personality, and a cause you believe in. I think you could win, and I can help you do it." "Really?" Chelsea said, dabbing her eyes with a handkerchief and pulling herself together. But I'm only 12 years old. Don't you have to be 18 or something? There are ways around that, Lane said, flipping me a wink and leading her way. Here's what we have to do. So long, King of the Hill, I called after him. Abby came over to me with a big smile on her face. I don't know how much about politics, she said as she straightened my tie, but that was a great speech. You really think so? Oh, yeah. I told you you'd make a great president, Moon. I just think you make a better kid. You're probably right, I said. Hey, Ab, I was wondering, maybe you want to come over tomorrow after school? And do what, Judd? Oh, I don't know. Play a game of life, maybe. Sounds fabulous.